It's January 27th, 2019. This is Fancy Ramen. I'm Neil.
I'm Cookie. And I'm Scott.
Cookie, you were out last week. Would you want to elaborate on the things you did?
Yeah, I was in San Antonio looking for friends. I found none.
I was hoping you were going to break out into a story about how you got separated from your brother and friend and spent the entire time looking for them in what would later become a movie, a family comedy movie.
Was it really a family comedy movie?
Yeah, you'd be looking for your friends, but it turns out you were looking for yourself all along.
No.
I've got other really good movie ideas. Like, I want to bring up the idea of My Honeybee. And Honeybee is basically Applebee's. And the concept of the movie is it's a rom-com where a bartender, a burnt-out bartender, ends up getting a note of appreciation. And so he has to go through his coworkers and his regulars to figure out who the secret admirer is. That's My Honeybee.
I feel as if we should just scrap this podcast and just start working on these.
Yeah, we could get a lifetime deal, I think, a lot faster, and we could get a MeUndies ad now that I know that your secret talent is D-level scripts.
Yeah, exactly. Not even like, not actual good, interesting movies, but rather Hollywood quality movies.
Yeah.
Very much so. One of my friends whose works with me was going to PAX as well, and we spent the entire weekend trying to find each other, but it's like also not really trying to find each other in like the weirdest, like most lazy, oh hey, I'm doing this, where are you
at? I hope to bump into you there.
Pretty much.
Okay.
It's like I'm going to this panel with show plans. 45 minutes later, I'm in this room. 30 minutes later, I'm interviewing this person. An hour later, guess we're going to dinner. Bye.
Honestly,
we'll try again tomorrow.
The best way to dodge somebody. Just give them the I was here 30 minutes ago, and then immediately change locations and keep giving them breadcrumbs away from where you're headed and where you were.
Very much so. I learned that the key to any successful convention is having a large quartered off area full of bean bags and call it a handheld station for people to just like nap and play their
and
Switches
also,
and 3DSs.
Yeah, I was going to say also use their 3DS. Oh, I guess the Nintendo Switch is in now, but you could use your, is it Game Pass? What do they call it in the Nintendo where you, in the Nintendo DS where if you have them next to each other, Street Pass.
Oh, okay. Street passing each other. Basically.
Do people use that anymore?
Nintendo DS's? No. There's a Switch and a 3DS.
I can't play certain games like Stella Glow on the Switch.
Not yet, you can't. But after this PAX, I'm sure that all like weird ass third party developed games are going to be on the Switch now.
If you told me that the developers of Stella Glow, Image Epoch, came out from their defunct state to port all of their games over to Switch, I would be fucking ecstatic. There's a lot of story behind this developer that we don't need to go into, but I will say, as soon as you look up Image Epoch, and it's literally Image and Epoch from Chrono Trigger put together, the first thing that will pop up in your feed, or the first of many things, will include Ryoe Mikage, What Happens? And yes, it involves a CEO of a company disappearing potentially due to Yakuza threats.
Cool.
It's super great. But I don't want to detract, or I don't want to derail us any further from I have already regarding PAX.
Okay. Well, PAX was a lot of fun. We are going to make a yearly trip out of it now. Just going to PAX South. Maybe hopefully get to PAX Unplugged, Gen Con, start going to these larger conventions. Like I was saying, any successful event now needs to have like a handheld station, like just a place for people to relax. Like 50% of the people in the handheld lounge were just napping, just on beanbags, including the friend that I actually traveled with. 9 times out of 10 is just like, oh, I wonder where Ryan is. I'm going to go to the handheld station. Yep, he's taking a nap. Good for him. And then they had a room called an AFK room. It's just a room that had a licensed psychiatrist in it, slash like cordoned off areas for people who are just overwhelmed. And they're just like, okay, I just need to be away from my keyboard for a little bit. I'm going to go in this room.
That's wild. It's super cool, but very surprising that they'd have convention stress support, I guess.
Yeah. My top things for PAX was, oh my God, that convention hall was huge. They have plenty of room to grow. There were a lot of people, but it never felt like I can't walk 2 centimeters without bumping into somebody, which is great. Well, at least until you got to the floor with all the vendors and everyone.
It's a good sign of business. It's not so good a sign for a consumer or a person going to the convention on business.
Correct. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. Got to talk and meet with a lot of developers. I guess at things like PAX and these like for the community things, it's a lot easier for you to just like walk up and say, oh, hi, I'm with this group of people. Do you mind if I ask you a couple of questions? And to have a nice Zoom H1 audio recorder with even a windscreen attached to it, it kind of looks a little professional. Lots of people ask me for my card. We don't have
Jesus.
Cards.
Not well, yet, it's a we good don't. Thing. They would probably look it up and be like, what the fuck is this? And what is this houseplant?
Oh, no. They know about the houseplant. Because, yeah, I had a couple of people.
You don't introduce the podcast as like, or the channel or whatever, the site as, yeah, we worship the houseplant, the spider houseplant.
We don't?
I mean, Neil, you're only speaking for 1 of 3 people here.
I guess so. I guess you guys probably frequent the subreddit Tree Lovers.
Yeah. I guess the
That's a I know, that's kind of an inside joke too, right?
One of the that is God, what episode was that from? Doesn't matter. I guess the developer from who made the game Y2K is gonna be very confused when he listens to this. Not developer, publisher. For Y2K is going to be very confused when he looks us up.
They don't give a shit. They're the publisher. More press is good press. So tell us, how amazing was Y2K? No.
Actually, I bought it, still haven't played it. Instead, I played one of their other games that they're publishing that, Neil, you would love. You would absolutely love it. I'm not going to tell you what it is until later when I get to talk about the games I got to play. But either way, yeah, it was really nice just being able to walk up to people and say, hey, yeah, I'm with this group. This is kind of what we do and what we talk about. Do you mind if I ask you a few questions? I got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 different interviews from both developers and publishers. Board games, computer games, console games alike. One of the things that I did not get an interview for that I'm really sad about is a guy who made a game called Boyfriend Dungeon.
That sounds good.
Yeah, it's a dating simulator dungeon crawler.
Do you have to... What details do you have about this game so far besides the elevator pitch here?
So, got to play it. Let you get up to like level 3 or 4 before it actually like says, thanks for playing. Okay. But it's a game where you date your weapons. Mm-hmm. So, like, there's this dagger. She is a female. There's a sword, a laser sword. They're both males. There's a cat, apparently, according to, like, the title sequence intro that you can also date that turns into a weapon.
Okay. Is the cat a weapon on its own? Do you throw the cat at what you're trying to fight?
I don't know yet, but it's very inclusive on things like, okay, would you like to be considered a... he/him, her/she, or them/they. It's like you go on like actual dates with the thing in the like weapon, and it's in the real world. And then the dungeon was a mall that we got to play in. And as you go to like different parts of the mall, so like you're finding your way through the mall, you find the video arcade and you get to like go on a date at the video arcade. And depending on which weapon you're using or which weapon you want to go on a date on, they'll be like, oh, yeah, man, this is my ish. Or you can go to like the fountain where you usually like flick the coin in and you make a wish and all that stuff. And it's cute.
That's awesome.
It's adorable.
You can't forget a torch when you go to visit the Hot Topic because otherwise it's too dark to see.
Yeah, pretty much. So yeah, that's like one of the only games that I like really super enjoyed that I did not get a chance to get like an interview. Besides besides super duper bid games that have been on like my list of games that, hey, I've really wanted to play. I didn't care about getting an interview. I just wanted to play.
Right.
I just wanted to play. Bought a few games while not at PAX, but bought a few games because of PAX. So Y2K mm-hmm. being one of them. Me and Lizzie have been playing the shit out of Divinity Original Sin 2 because they were actually playing that game at PAX as well. Ended up playing Firewall Zero Hour. If you ever get a chance to play this game, play it. It's a VR game. It's pretty much Rainbow Six Siege in VR. And it's...
Oh.
We just curb stomped the other team. They were doing a nice little 4v4 of capture points / don't capture / defend points. And oh my God, it is so good.
I have seen some footage of that. That game looks... it looks promising in regards to the tech as well. Like it has an appropriate response to how people would otherwise try and like clip guns through surfaces and stuff. It takes into account things like that. Mm-hmm. What system did you play it on there?
PSVR.
Okay.
So with the aim controllers in it, so the one thing I found really weird, since the aim controller has two joysticks, one joystick was used to move forward, but also like look left and right. And the other controller was it had the opposite thing. It was the one controller moved forward, one joystick moved forward and backwards, the other joystick strafed you left and right. But the controller that moved forward and backwards also did the pivot your view left and right. It was weird. So that way you couldn't like move forward and turn at the same time. So you couldn't just like, hey, I want to go forward, and then I want to take this left-hand corner. It was go forward to the middle of the thing, and then be able to turn your camera to look left.
I also stand corrected. It's a PlayStation exclusive, apparently, so.
Oh, yeah, no, and it's one of the reasons why I kind of really want to rebuy the PlayStation VR.
Did you sell it to a stranger or to family?
I did sell it to a stranger.
That's rough.
I'd have to buy a new PlayStation VR, but it'll be okay. Got to also play an exclusive Oculus game. Well, not a game that's going to be exclusive on Oculus, a game that's being developed called... Oh, just had it up. Just had the name of this thing up. Population 1. It is a battle royale game in VR. It's got its usual, hey, you can build things trope, and it's a battle royale. Also, you can glide. So if you're on top of like a tall building, you can jump off said tall building and fly around and have midair fights if the other players are good enough. But got a nice little interview from one of the developers of that game. So I'll stop it there until we can listen to the interview later. And that'll come out eventually. But yeah, got to play a lot of games that aren't out. Games that I thought were going to be like, oh yeah, I really want to play this game. So the Jump Force game, got to play that. It's a lot of fun. Has big frame rate issues. Large frame rate issues. But it looks really pretty. That's the...
Shonen Jump fighter, right?
Yep, Shonen Jump 3D fighter. Looks really pretty.
So do you think it's worth having Jump Force in existence if Dragon Ball Z is completely... Dragon Ball FighterZ gets completely removed from the fighting scene? Is it worth it?
Yes and no. I'll say yes because it's not really a good alternative to that because they play as very, very different games. Dragon Ball Z FighterZ was more of a Marvel vs. Capcom 2 type fighter slash a, oh God, what is that fighting game called? Guilty Gear Xrd or Guilty Gear Fighter. So 2D, whereas this one's closer to a, oh God, the Dragon Ball Z Budokai series. There was a really bad version that came out where you can actually play with all the anime characters as well.
I just bring it up because I don't know if we ever really clarified on this in earlier podcasts or outside of podcasts, but the reason why the Dragon Ball FighterZ tournaments were getting canceled was because the owner, the IP owner or whatever, also behind Jump Force, was basically canceling those events so they could put more emphasis on Jump Force and potential Jump Force events.
Oh, see that? Oh. I did not know.
I don't think we covered that. We were speculating that a bunch of the Dragon Balls had already been collected.
No, did not know that was the reasoning. So yeah, no, not worth it. Jump Force is, it's fun. I could see how it can become sort of deep, but it's not going to replace the beauty that was Dragon Ball Z FighterZ.
Right.
Well, that's sad.
Very.
It looks pretty. It's got major frame rate issues just because of like all the particle effects and shit that's going on. But it looks really pretty, plays very fast until frame rate issues, then it slows down just a little bit, but nothing that's going to be like, oh man, I inputted punch here, and because of the frame rate dip, he didn't actually punch. It's more the frame rate dip happens right after someone gets punched, and they're going flying back in a corner, and there are blue particle effects, and someone's trying to teleport at the same time, and there's two assist characters out. Lots of shit goes on.
So it's quite literally frame drops where like things are still happening. It's just you don't get to see it. Like playing a game at 15 frames a second.
Yeah. So it's like, oh yeah, nope. It's not going to interrupt my combo because this is the part of the combo that's literally just, oh, character's flying away. Now I'm in the middle of teleporting and I will be on the other side of him now-ish. Hmm. I'm just going to mash square until I punch him. Punch them good. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. We got to play a bunch of video games, got to eat some really, really good food. If you ever get a chance to go to a Brazilian steakhouse, do it. Just do it.
That's
Brazilian steakhouse
when they just shave out the meat onto your plate, right?
Yes. Yes, it is. Went to a place called Fogo de Chao, and it was the highlight. So every year, whenever we go to PAX South, we are spending the last night going to Fogo de Chao and eating so much that we're uncomfortable because it's expensive.
Right, so you got to get your fill.
So I'm really scared because I looked up Brazilian steakhouse, and just as you said, Fogo de Chao, that is the first thing that came up on my search query. So Google is listening into this podcast somehow, even though it hasn't been released as of this recording.
Eggs, yeah. Oh my God, we have a Brazilian steakhouse here. We do have a Brazilian steakhouse.
Are you sure we do?
It's called Rodizio Grill. Hmm. Oh, but is it like a true Brazilian steakhouse? Because it also says restaurant.
And it also says Outback Steakhouse in my Google Maps search, too.
Rodizio Grill.
I'm not an expert of Australian geography or culture, but I don't think Australia is Brazilian.
No, it is not. Oh, man, this is in Lincoln. Damn. Rodizio Grill is in Lincoln. We don't have a Brazilian steakhouse here. That makes me sad. But yes, they literally shave off meat and they give you a little thing that's like, okay, yeah, no, you go, you get a little card that says it's green. That means, hey, come shave off all the meat you can. When it's red, it's no meat for me, please, and thank you. I'm taking a break from all the meat that you're shaving off. And these guys at Fogo de Chao played it like a fucking video game. Like, from across the room, they could just spot the green. It wasn't even like a particularly like fancy green or anything. And it's just a little flat tile that sits on your desk. And it's like, oh, that guy's got, ooh, what is that? What kind of steak is that? I'm curious. And you just flip it. He's already on his way. Stopping by other people and just like ninja starring it away, just going, steak for you, steak for you, steak for you, your steak.
So there's a type of steak cut that's extremely popular in Brazil. I can't remember. Oh, it's picanha. Did you have any picanha?
a couple of different picanhas.
Was it everything you ever dreamed of or didn't know about but now will dream of?
Yes. Well, everything there was now what I will dream of. It's like eating that was me for grilling / cooking meat moment of when I first listened to Kanye West and Jay-Z's Watch the Throne album. It was like, when I listened to that album, I said, damn, I could never produce music again because I just suck. I suck so hard at producing music. This is very well produced, Kanye West. I'm proud of you. And Fogo de Chao was like, I suck at cooking. Like, they had chicken that was like bourbon honey chicken. And like, the chicken was just oozing with all the juices, but it was fully cooked at the same time. And I'm like, how you do that? I try to make like nice, good, flavorful chicken that's still juicy, but you know, you got that. It's kind of like trying to get like soft butter in the microwave at 3 seconds. It's still rock hard, but at 3.7 seconds, it's just a puddle. That's where that chicken like range lives. And yeah, the chicken was delicious. The steak was delicious. We had some pork that was Parmesan crusted. They had a real wheel of Parmesan cheese. Like you could see the wheel and you could see the imprint, the stamp imprinting on it to say, hey, yes, no, this is real Parmesan cheese made in that one specific area. And it was the best Parmesan cheese I've ever had. Like, there was nothing there that was, oh, yeah, I could do without this. And if there was something there that I could do without, I didn't have it. I learned my lesson as well about going to these places because they were like, oh, yeah, no, we have this nice cold bar and that has all like the cheeses and like kind of some deli-ish meats and things of that nature. And they're like, yep, you can go there and then come back with your plate full of food. And then you flip the tile over and then you start getting the main course meals, those meats. Me and Ryan, we got up, we got our plates. My brother, he simply stayed sitting down and flipped this thing to green. We came back, he had all the meat. And we were like, we made a mistake because we also started just like eating like our salads and our things. And we were like, okay, all right, let's get some meat. And then after the first three pieces of meat, we were like, okay, getting kind of full. It was the wrong move to make. It was the wrong play, but it's okay. Oh, and I guess one other random thing. Gamers are super fucking efficient at lines. On Saturday, it took us about 5 or 6 minutes to get to the back of the line. And these were like thick eight man like wide lines that they had us in. It took us like 5 or 6 minutes to get to walk to the back of the line. Took us 3 to 4 minutes to be already inside of PAX. Gamers are efficient as fuck. Like, they were just, it's like, okay, yeah, no, this line is wrapping around the corner. Oh, this line is still going. Okay, we are now in line. Holy fuck, how are we already at the front of the line? Well, that was convenient. But yeah, so they had people waving the metal detector wands, checking bags in a very efficient / inefficient manner because the lady was like, oh yeah, your bag is like mostly empty. She just checked the two main pockets, not where I had my external battery pack / anything else. And she was just like, eh, good enough. Go on. Get out of here, you little scamp, you fucking nerd. It was nice. It was a good time. Anyway, yeah, that's kind of like the highlight of my life at the moment, because this week was just full of work and not wanting to be at work and coming back to from warm weather and eating outside every day to shoveling snow.
Yeah, that's a bit of a jarring transition.
Yep. Lizzie had the same transition, except for she got hot weather because she was in Phoenix, Arizona.
Oh, nice. You guys both fled the cold of the Midwest for a little bit.
A slight reprieve of warmth, yeah. It was nice. It was beautiful. I got to decide that I like Lyft over Uber because my first time trying to like get the, oh yeah, if I call an Uber, is it free for the first ride? It's not free. and they didn't have any like coupons. Whereas as soon as I signed up for Lyft, they were like, okay, here's $5 off your first two rides. Here's that coupon / $2 off your next 10 rides after that. Here's that coupon as well. Have a good day.
That's nice. I got burned by Lyft when I tried to use them for the first time to get to the airport. Nobody showed up when we scheduled one, so I stopped using their service.
That'll also do it.
I didn't want to use Uber, but they came when I hailed the ride, so I decided I did need some level of follow through. That's good to hear that my interaction was a fluke.
I'm happy for you. So what have you guys been up to as I took the first 7 hours of the podcast?
That's okay. We missed you. We needed your voice back on the mic. We needed that Hefty PAX update. I'm very excited for your next year where you go with our fancy ramen business cards that are designed to look like flavor packets.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, we're doing this, right? Because actually, one of the developers
I'm
I
the
asked,
idea,
like,
man.
What's your...
Follow through and execution, not always my thing. The idea itself, I will provide.
Damn.
Neil's the Hallmark movie guy, while Scott's the idea guy. And I'll just be that one guy who gets to actually travel and do the fun shit.
Yeah, you're the fun guy.
Hey, I'm not really super big on traveling, so I'm fine with that setup.
I'm also fine with the setup. Now let's get some sponsors so they can actually like sponsor me to fly out places.
Let's get some more listeners and so we can get those sponsors.
Sweet. Sounds like we got a plan. Yeah, so what you been up to, Scott?
I spent my Martin Luther King holiday off doing the best I could, snowboarding all day, and
just like the king would.
Yeah, just like the king would, shredding on the mountain. It was a good day. Otherwise, I've been busy at work. We've been working real hard. I got to enjoy, in your realm of delicious foods, Cookie, I got to enjoy on Friday a very fancy cheese plate that we got as part of a catered lunch to celebrate a certain milestone at work. And so I ate so much cheese that, well, I don't know. I ate more cheese in that day than I've eaten since the beginning of the new year in its entirety.
Was the milestone that no one had clogged the bathroom for 3 days and then afterwards
you clogged the bathroom? For three straight? No, my insides are probably still plugged from that cheese consumption. I don't know if I can eat again because I might just pop. But
it's okay. You got the bidet. Just
yeah. Gonna have to attack from a different angle. besides enjoying my Monday holiday and eating a ton of cheese on Friday, I didn't get up to very much just because I'm really digging into that Crunchyroll subscription. So I just watched. I mean, I binged on some anime hard. I finished up a bunch of shows that I had stopped in the middle of or caught up on other stuff that now that I had the premium access, I could watch the next episode or so. So I did a ton of that outside of gaming, and that's about all I did, to be honest.
I'm happy for you. What'd you catch up on?
I finished Gundam's Iron-Blooded Orphans, which I cannot recommend. I enjoyed the ride, but not the finish whatsoever. And it may also be the fact that the last time I watched it was many, many months ago. I think actually before I moved into my apartment. So that's got to be like 7 or 8 months ago at this point. If not longer. So maybe not the best way to finish off the finale of a series is to not remember what happened for the first 48 episodes and then watch 49 and 50 close to 3/4 of a year later. But I can say it definitely didn't have much of an emotional impact, nor did the way that they tie it up seem all that great. But I'm still trying to give the Gundam a a try after Neil recommended a couple. You said something about 96 Unicorn or whatever. Is that good? I think that was one that I marked on my list to check out.
Unicorn was a watch. I watched it.
Yeah, I think...
Was a watch.
I think it's hard to recommend Unicorn unless you know the rest of the UC universe.
And or you can just watch it blindly. You can just watch it blindly like I did.
So Deltarune
is... I thought
they
were all just different.
Deltarune is only good because... Or not only good. Deltarune's better because you played Undertale.
It's especially good because Undertale. Okay.
Yeah. Unicorn... I mean, like, okay, I think it's fair to say something that's spoilerish, but not the spoiler. Unicorn addresses key things about the war or multiple wars themselves, whatever. So if the UC timeline is mostly about the war between humans and space humans,
right?
Unicorn addresses the core question or an element of why is this war even happening to begin with, and what could, you know, what possibly could happen that could potentially bring peace together, or like I it's really hard for me to allude to things without actually giving things away.
Basically,
but
if
you don't know about the battle or the wars beforehand and everything that's had to be sacrificed, if you don't know who Char is, you don't know like any of these elements, then Unicorn maybe loses a lot of its luster.
Okay, I might just pull it off my list for now then.
It gives you a nice overview of it all, though. They're just like, hey, there's this hero, his name's Char, to these people, and there was this incident that happened. Welcome to this world.
I would say if you watch the Gundam, the movie, like the remade movies, I think these exist, I have no idea, of the original Gundam series, and then the remade movies or the reimagined movies for Zeta Gundam, that's probably all you need. And then there's bonuses. If you like those, there's the seventh mobile suit. Cookie, you'll have to help me on this one. It's like the one Gundam series that doesn't have a Gundam in it, basically. Or, I mean, the main characters aren't like Mary Sue's.
I got nothing. I got nothing for you.
That's all right. We can skip.
Just watch Gundam Wing and call it a day.
Oh, God.
Hey, I didn't tell him to watch. Oh God, what was the one with the chibi Gundams?
That probably has more value than Gundam Wing. Gundam Wing is just like let's just pick out the most eligible BL candidates and put them together into a 5-way session. And by 5-way session, I don't mean anything dirty, but let's not say that. I don't know.
Yeah. Or Shining Fingers Gundam Wing. No, Shining Fingers, that one.
That was a Gundam G, right? The one that was basically made to become a fighting game. I thought that was fine.
That one was fine. Just watch Big O and you'll be fine.
Oh, God, yeah, Big O. And watch Giant Robo as well. That's another good mecha anime.
Okay.
And for those who are curious, SD Gundam Force is the chibi Gundam anime.
That's what it is. That's right. I've seen an episode or two of that one, actually. let's see. The only other thing is I think I binged through all of Season 3 of Attack on Titan. It took me a while to get to it. I finally caught up to where I had read the manga up to, and then a little bit past that. And it's refreshing to see that they're finally headed to that basement, the plot point of the first couple episodes of the show as it started.
Yeah, the first couple episodes of season one.
It's a long way around, but it's sort of like a Metroidvania where you see the door and the four boss statues on it or whatever. And then you finally kill that fourth boss and you're like, hey, should I go check out that door that I landed my ship next to?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's exciting. That's good to see. But, I mean, there's nothing really that interesting about it. I just watched a ton of anime and did not do a huge amount of exciting things with my life. So, I'm willing to cede the rest of my time.
Did you watch the Sword Art Online anime? No, I don't do that.
That's not me.
I'm actually enjoying the new season so far.
It's not really
about Kirito.
It's about blonde Kirito.
He's pretty much dead. He's pretty much dead.
I'm not sure if I'm interested in it, even if you tell me that that character is no longer a focus, because I don't I don't think there were other elements that I enjoyed either.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's still kind of a focus, but he's not really the main focus. There are now three characters who are the focus, and two of them are new. And Asuna's just sitting in the background, being like, I was really the best fighter in the first season. What the hell happened?
Neil, what have you been up to this week?
Well, I spent most of my day sick as a dog. Most of my week, I should say, sick. On Martin Luther King Day, I actually stayed home with flu-like symptoms. And those persisted throughout the week until basically yesterday. And today, I've only got a bit of a slight cough, and most of my voice is back. So I've been kind of side-railed, but when you're sick, that's usually a great time for me, at least, to watch anime. And I had picked up a series that I had brought up before. The English version of the name or translation would be Rascal Doesn't Dream of Bunny Senpai.
Top anime of 2018.
Actually, I'd have to go over all the other animes I've watched and see when they were actually released. But yeah, that's a pretty strong statement that I might agree with. It's fantastic. I'd watched through the first arc, which was either three or four episodes originally. And over the sick week, I've spent the rest of the commitment to get through the rest of the series. It's really good. And it's the type of show that after you get done watching it, at least for myself, it really is pushing me to go and invest the time to read the light novels to see what else I've missed with it. In particular, this show does a really good job of handling the protagonist as he goes through what could be a quote-unquote harem situation or multiple, affection situation. They handle it extremely well. After the first episode on the second arc, there's a point where I think, I wasn't the only one. I was going through the comments on the website as well, and everyone's like, oh shit, I feel like I have to drop this show. If this is going to go the direction I think it's going to go, I'm going to drop it. And referring to the fact that the protagonist, the Mary Sue, ends up getting multiple admirers, and then it becomes a harem show. And the way the opening is presented too is that it could each arc is potentially going to follow a character in that same way the first arc does, but it does a great job of avoiding the situation. It was good. It was just really good overall. There are a lot of complex things that happen in the story, and despite all of the weird circumstances that happen, there's constantly a character saying that it's quantum physics and blames everything on quantum physics, which, if that gives you any idea of how weird this show is, I hope it does.
I'm down for it. I haven't actually finished watching it, but I know I need to. But the new anime season started, and guys,
you're hooked on Shield Hero.
You know, it's on my list. I keep hearing how awful all the characters are, that it's honestly on my list. Konosuba got back on my list as well. There's been a lot of talk about that on the interwebs lately as well. But guys,
did I get continued?
No, they just came out with a dub. So everyone's like, oh yeah, this shit was great. They're the best worst girls. That's the Konosuba crew. But guys, you know that issue that everyone has with, I'm in love with my sister, let me do naughty things to my sister? Did you know that there's an anime out there where this guy was just completely enthralled with his high school teacher?
Yeah, it's called Onegai Senpai.
And then to get over his high school teacher...
Or sensei, sorry.
To get over his high school teacher, he ended up hooking up with this random chick at a mixer that he went to.
Oh, I read the manga. I know the one you're talking about. What is it called?
Domestic Girlfriend.
Yeah.
And then 2 days later, his dad's like, oh, by the way, I've been seeing this chick. We're getting married. Also, she's got two daughters. Guess who the daughters happen to be? That random chick he just slept with and his teacher. Does it make it any better?
The premise is just so weird. And I mean, not weird. It's such a coincidence, right? It's so...
It is. And now it's like bringing that question for me. It's like, okay, because we tend to, me and Lizzie tend to avoid the whole, oh, yep, I'm in love with my brother. I'm in love with my sister. But now it's like, I'm in love with these two random, well, I'm in love with one random female. And to get over her, I slept with another random female. Now they're my sisters through no fault of my own.
Not related by blood.
And I had no earthly idea. Not related by blood. What anime was that? Where they're like, parents were constantly saying, you guys should all hook up because you're not related by blood. Scotch checked out.
It's kind of Marmalade Boy, where the parents end up swinging and exchanging partners and getting remarried, and the two kids become an item too.
Nice. Scott's gone. Scott's done. So it doesn't make it any better that he happened to be in love with this one random female and slept with this other random female, and now they're brother and sister.
So I read like maybe the first 20 chapters, 10 chapters maybe, I don't know, of this manga, and I was just like, I checked out pretty quickly too. I read it more out of curiosity because like it's just so coincidental is what I'll say. It's like you kind of have to watch this train wreck happen. And I went ahead and jumped like 100 chapters into the future. And the progression that has been made is staggering. Staggering. Okay, one second. Let me look up the...
100 chapters?
Hold on.
How?
Hold on. Before we go any further... Yes, there are... 21 volumes so far. It's still in production. And
that's too many.
And the latest chapter from volume 20, since 21 isn't listed yet, despite it being released, is 194.
Are they trying to be Naruto? That's too many.
Hey, I'm going to say spoilers, by the way, before I say anything else. Cookie, don't you want to know which sister he ends up with?
I hope it's the older sister at this point.
Ask me that question so I can answer.
Okay. Which sister does he end up with?
Yes.
Nice.
That being said, there's no flipping way they're turning this this thing into a full series. So I have a feeling that they're going to change the story in a way that... has more of like a definitive beginning and ending, because and maybe I'm being the asshole here. I just don't necessarily see the quality in the manga for them to like justify having a 7 season long anime for this.
I don't see the quality in the anime to justify having a season. Okay, Scott, we're done talking about brothers loving his sisters.
Welcome to the Fancy Ramen Podcast, a podcast about video games? No, not anymore.
About familial love, forbidden and otherwise. Okay, games. Do you guys mind if I start off?
Please, go ahead.
Yeah, go for it, man.
So I streamed some Xenogears, and because that's the most exciting game that came out this week. Now, Xenogears, really old PlayStation RPG. It has like a cult following. I had gotten like maybe two thirds to like halfway through the game when I was much younger, and I remember this game pretty fondly, but not like a rabid fan. Traditional RPG, except there's also mecha fights, and they also have a combat or a combo system in place here too. Kind of new for, you know, what the game was at that point in time. Sorry, what was that?
New for PlayStation, 1998. Yeah,
exactly. And like a turn-based RPG with combos and stuff was relatively unheard of. I think there might have been something in the Super Nintendo that did something similar. Anyways, I started playing it. It's a completely different game now, being of an adult age that understands plot in general. This game kind of feels like it's Akira, Kung Fu movie, and then like a Gundam anime all smashed together. And when I say Akira, I mean like the psychological movie or the psychic power movie, cult classic.
As opposed to what?
The undead one, right?
My friend Akira, who's right here. No. Is there another Akira film or movie?
Yeah, I thought there was. I thought there was an anime for it, and they were like unkillable or something.
You got shit for you, man.
Anywho, though, I just wanted to throw that out there real quick. I am asking any listener, tell me why I should continue playing Xenogears, because random battles, which is a very like typical thing in JRPGs of yesteryears, are just excruciatingly painful. So the dungeons themselves aren't very large, but you can't get more than 3 or 4 feet before you go into a battle. And because of the combo system and stuff, battles take a little longer to run through. And it occurred to me that like a lot of games made around these periods of time, they took the opposite approach where they made the dungeons larger from a scale standpoint, but they had less random battles. So like the amount of time you put into the game was similar in regards to getting through the dungeon, but it felt less tedious because you did more running around and less random battling. So I want the will to keep playing it because the story is supposed to be really good and really trippy and psychological at points. And I like the mechas, but if you're a huge fan of Xenogears, tell me why I should keep playing it, or like fight for it for me, please. Because right now I don't know if I'm necessarily having fun, but I've been having a fucking blast playing the remake of Resident Evil 2, which as far as I can tell at this point, they just have named it Resident Evil 2. This game is fucking great.
Is that out?
Yeah, it released this past Friday. It is quite literally, definitively, like, I think this would be at the top of my list if it were released in 2018, easily.
Already?
Yeah, there's a level of nostalgia along with surprise mixed in, and just the way they've approached the game, I feel personally that they've been able to be really faithful to some of the campiness, but at the same time give it a level of seriousness and intrigue that it didn't have before. A really good example
scared me.
Is that Ada, the character, the femme fatale from, other Resident Evil games, but RE2, of course, is where she's introduced. She gets introduced in the original game as like, oh, I'm looking for my boyfriend. And it's just like nothing. I mean, she kind of gets introduced in a way that I feel like doesn't really give a whole lot of respect for her character, especially seeing what she does later in the series. Like, she's basically one of the most badass characters, despite not being a super mutant person like any other character in the series is. She doesn't break boulders with her fist. She's a human. In contrast, I don't want to give any spoilers away, but like when you are introduced to Ada, she's fucking cool, and you're immediately just like, all right, like I am glad you're finally getting the respect that you're given in every other game you're in Resident Evil 2, like your introduction. So I'm considering this, I don't care how it actually falls in the canon, but I consider this a complete retcon, and as a result, Ada's always been cool. It doesn't matter. There's also like gameplay twists. Like I've got like one spoiler, if you guys don't mind me saying it, and maybe I think it might already be known by most people based on trailer and release footage and so forth. Are you guys cool with me saying it? It's not story related, but it's gameplay related.
The game scared me. Yeah. I waited in line for an hour and a half to play 20 minutes of it, and it scared me. Got a cool shirt, but it scared me. After you.
You could have done 30 minutes of demo time instead.
Yep.
With no line.
Got to play a lot of Smash with people. But yeah, no, that game scared me. Spoil it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
I'll probably play it, but if it's gameplay related, I'm less... actually, I don't give a shit about the story. I don't know if any spoiler is going to be that big of a deal.
All right. Well, maybe I'll skirt around it. So, and maybe you'll be able to guess based on what I say here. But there is a very specific difference between there's multiple differences between Route A and B in Resident Evil 2, the original.
And you play as at the beginning of this, you get to choose between playing as Leon or Claire.
In the remake, yes. Well, you could in both games, okay. I guess, yeah. So there is a specific enemy encounter that you don't get in Route A. So the first time you play Resident Evil 2, the original, you never run into this enemy. So that's in the back of my head. And I agreed with Tiffany that, okay, like, I'll play the first time through with Leon. So I'm going to play Leon A, basically, and you'll get Claire B. Okay. And part of my justification, or part of my reasoning or rationale behind why I wanted to play through the first time was because I wanted to avoid the enemy that you fight in Route B in the original game. So I'm going through the course of the game, and obviously I'm running into all these different things, like the map, the police station is different. It's also way more believable in terms of like an architectural standpoint too. Not saying it's the best mm-hmm. designed building in the world, but like everything makes way more sense than it originally did. But one key difference happens that forces you to do something that you would only do in Route B, or normally do in Route B, I think. I'm kind of hazy on some of these details. But as a result, you end up fighting the thing it is that you don't get in Route A your first time through, or at least playing as Leon. And it just caught me off guard so much because it basically became Jack from Resident Evil 7. Like a situation where I'm getting chased around. And like one of the big reasons why I had to give the reins over to Tiffany during Resident Evil 7 was just like the panic and anxiety of having Jack on your ass the entire time through the mansion portion. And when that happened this game, it was like this. Not only was it anxiety inducing and terror filling, but it was just such a unique way to make the map, or like the area that you spend, you know, like a good half of the game or like 60% of the game in, feel completely refreshing, because you no longer look at the area, the police station, in the same way that you did just 20 minutes before or a couple hours before. What this game does best for me, at least, is that even though you end up backtracking through a bunch of the same areas, you can never expect that area to be the same. Because if you do, you find yourself surprised. And even then, even if it is the same, the occurrence of zombies getting back up and stuff, and zombie encounters themselves, are interesting enough that it never feels like, oh, I just have to do the thing and get by. It's just such a refreshing take on what feels like it should be such a diluted and boring genre at this point. And the thing, the B route occurrence that happens, like, it's because it has the original game to play off of too. The unexpected things that happen, or the things that you are not prepared for because you have those preconceived notions of the past, that I think also really help in the game's favor. But I don't think it happens in a way that makes it exclusionary, but like, I wouldn't be getting more enjoyment playing Resident Evil 2 if I played the original. In fact, I probably would potentially have even more surprises as a result of not playing the original and playing the remake, but it isn't any better or worse as a result. If it's true to the original game, I'm probably about 75% of the way through Leon's story. But I don't know, things happen in ways that I was not expecting, and there are cool little differences in the way they tell the story that seem way more suitable in a modern day setting. Like they've allowed themselves to write a better story as a result of the changes that they've made to the script and setting. And so far, the only additional thing I wanted to say is that as a result of these changes and changes in the core gameplay mechanics as well, it's made me so much more excited to play the game after I finish it too. Hopefully with like bonus weapons and things that would enable me to like also throw away the mentality I have with this game or with this playthrough currently, which is, you know, try and conserve ammo, try not to waste bullets, try not to waste healing items, and just kind of approach it from a Rambo standpoint. Because the game feels good enough that I would love to just go in with infinite ammo and infinite explosives and just have fun too.
Yeah, you want your Chicago typewriter gameplay.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I would recommend it.
You're really kind of selling me on this. I mean, Resident Evil 4 is the only Resident Evil game I played start to finish, but I enjoyed the hell out of it. And it really did have a great mix between campy and stupid and still absolutely terrifying at moments. Like, it's a weird balance to strike because humor is such a great way to completely evaporate any sort of tension, which scary games like this are kind of all about. Like, you have to create a tense environment in order to have that real payoff on like draining the fear out of your subject and sometimes surprising them with a suspenseful shock. And Resident Evil is the only game I know that can both like make me laugh at something because it's overall just kind of really stupid and wacky, but also about 20 minutes later, I'm shooting bells and whatnot to keep these blind things from literally tearing me in half. And I'm horrified when they just point their head in my direction. Like, this is really cool, but I also blew it so bad playing that demo earlier that I'm worried that this game is just going to dunk on me repeatedly.
So you could go with the assisted mode, which I think has like a really good concept. I don't necessarily... All right, so it probably says it in the difficulty selection, but I don't recall what other lines of text there were. The one I remember is that the assisted mode is like an assisted aim mode primarily.
Is it like a sticky crosshair?
That's what I think. I haven't tried it myself, and I was kind of tempted to. But so, okay, backstory a little bit. People already found out with the PC version that if you put in a console command, you could actually change the game to a classic camera angle version of Resident Evil. So the game is a third person over the shoulder game initially. And by putting in this command code or console command, it changes it so every room has fixed angles or multiple fixed angles. And as a result, how the heck would you aim at anything? So the assisted aiming system is essentially where that comes in. And to illustrate it from like a third person over the shoulder view for a second, what happens is when you aim your gun in a close direction, direction to an enemy, you lock immediately onto the enemy's torso. And at least from what I've read, if you hit up at that point with your aim stick, you're going to then move your cursor, or it would move the crosshairs to its head. And if you move it down, it moves it to its legs or knees. So as a result, I don't know necessarily if it would be the most... I doubt you're going to be able to like hit people from across the room with headshots, we'll say, or knee shots with repeated accuracy. I think you still have to factor in like the crosshair movement and stuff. If you're moving, you'll be less accurate. If you stand still and let the crosshairs, you know, collide together or like
pinpoint.
Yeah, pinpoint. Thank you. You're going to have better success at shots, that sort of thing. So I don't think it necessarily is just a cheat. Instant headshot, headshot, red dead eye. Dead eye, I mean.
Right, because that is the Red Dead mechanic, is to target at the body and then slightly flick upwards to get as many headshots as you want.
Yep. But so as a result, like, I think there, it's not like just a gimme system. But I think if you're really bad at the aiming, which on a, if I'm predominantly a PlayStation or a PC gamer and I, you know, use a mouse a majority of the time, I wouldn't see any fault in you utilizing that aiming system to, you know, kind of handicap as a handicap, since you know, if I or whatever imaginary person doesn't play first person shooters on console. As for like the writing and so forth, it's not going to be like the gameplay mechanics aren't nearly as cheesy in a way, I guess, as 4 was. Like, you're not going to blow up crows and get grenades, unfortunately. it seems there might be some rubber banding going on with items too, because I've always found that, like, in terms of herbs, I'm always like in a or maybe I'm just bad, that's another thing too, but like I've been at like a caution state for like a good hour now just because I can't find another herb. But the writing is still definitely there, where you have serious parts and then you have like humorous parts side by side. In particular, you get a flyer like maybe 30 or 40% of the way through, say, like, or not a flyer, like a letter from some sort of city mascot, like Rocky the Raccoon or whatever the heck. And Rocky's like, "Hey kids, you know, how's it going, blah, blah, blah," and gives his spiel. And then partway through the letters, he's like, "You know, I've heard that some naughty children have been using my bobbleheads as target practice. You shouldn't do that. That's not very safe." And so that brochure or whatever is basically telling you that that's a collectible in the game. You go around looking for these Rocky the Raccoon figurines, I don't know what his actual name is, and you shoot them or break them, just like in Resident Evil 7 with those bobblehead guys. So they definitely have the comedy in there still. It's not necessarily like the forefront anymore, but it's still very like lighthearted in ways.
Nope, that game scared me. I literally had a moment in public, so yeah, I'm good. I'm good.
I think
they didn't have...
Oh, go ahead.
I was gonna say the like headset wasn't really like omnidirectional, so I knew there was a zombie somewhere, and here I am just spinning around in circles trying to find this fucking zombie, and next thing you know, it's just right on my person. Just right there.
Wait, the headset?
Yeah, because they had us in a like big loud, since we were playing in the room, so they gave us headsets to listen to the thing when I played the demo that they had at PAX.
I get you, like headphones.
Yeah,
which I don't know if they had that feature on, or if it's like if you need to have a good set of headphones. But there's a binaural mode. And then it lets you choose, like, I guess I should just say from the get-go, Resident Evil 2, excuse me, has such a great settings. I don't know. I wouldn't call it like a wizard or anything. It's just really good with its settings, visual and audio based. You go through not only like your typical like, move the brightness slider up and down before the image is just barely visible. It does that, but then it does it for brightness, for darkness, and contrast, which it's been a while or never since I've seen a game actually do that.
Brightness and darkness?
Yep, brightness, gray, contrast, and darkness. So like it lets you set your maximum HDR brightness, shit, your maximum darkness, and the contrast. So like they really want you to have like your screen set in a way that when you can't see things, you're not supposed to, and when you can, you know you're supposed to. Leon does a really good job, or your character in general, of like bringing out the flashlight when you need it to. And there are points in that game, if your settings are correct, where like all you can see is where the flashlight is, and where it's not are just like, you know, remnants of light reflecting off of surfaces that allow you to barely make out like, or allow you to easily enough make out what that's supposed to be, like, oh, there's going to be a wall there, but not enough to actually see the detail. So they do a good job, at least in my experience, of...
No, that was also my experience. Yeah. So I couldn't find the fucking zombie until it was on my person.
I can't say enough good things about that game. It's been really fun.
You make it sound really fun. I'm not going to play that game. Well, let me tell you about a game that I think you'll enjoy, Neil. It's called World of Horror. It is a one-bit game set in Japan in the 1980s, where you are stuck in Japan and you're trying to figure out a mystery of some sort. I didn't get very far in it. It didn't scare me because it's a one-bit game, so it's literally just, oh, there's a picture of things. I'm going to click here. Now there's a text dialogue. I'm too lazy to read text, but it seemed right up your alley. It's made by the same publishers who published Y2K, and also who published your favorite game in all time, Valhalla.
that's VA11 Hall hyphen A for any of you plebeians that don't know what he's talking about now. Yeah, I'll give it a shot. World of Horror.
Yeah, it comes out sometime 2019. I've got some assets that I need to give to you on Monday.
Okay.
So the developers of Valhalla / Y2K / World of Horror actually gave me a flash drive with promotional assets on it.
Oh, that's cool.
I know, right? It's kind of like we're big time or some shit.
Man, they're going to be so hyped when our 30 listeners don't get to see these assets because it's an audio podcast. No, I'll see what I can do with that. That's super cool of those guys.
Yeah, they were super nice. But yeah, the gameplay I found kind of boring, but I was like, this is right up Neil's alley. Neil's going to love this. Words and stuff. Fuck it. I'm going to talk about Divinity Original Sin 2.
How many hours do you think you have in it so far?
So me and Lizzie have a game where we've played for 4 hours. We started a game with a campaign with my brother as well. We're about 3 hours in. And my God, the game that me and Lizzie are playing by ourselves, it's going bad. It's going poorly. You know how I know it's going poorly?
Resources are low?
Yeah. Resurrection scrolls are very expensive. And I Googled, hey, are there alternate ways to resurrect people other than resurrection scrolls? And they're like, nah, this game's kind of punishing like that. It's very D&D permadeath type thing. So, like, we've got characters who died in a fight. We ended up winning the fight, so there are no monsters around them. But they're, like, deep into a fucking dungeon. So, literally, we'll have to buy resurrection scrolls, go back to the place that we're now wanted, go into the dungeon, resurrect them, and heal them at that point. It's a lot. But no, the game's really fun. It plays with, I'm not sure if you've played any of the Divinity Original Sins.
I played the first one.
So two is, from what I hear, different, but it's basically a RPG, turn-based RPG.
Turn-based grid-based, right?
Yep, turn-based grid-based. So quite literally, and playing split screen or playing online, so game can be played split screen or it can be played like, hey, you've got a copy, I've got a copy, Tiff's got a copy, Lizzie's got a copy, we can form a party and just like play together.
Wait, how many people can play together?
Four.
Ah, okay, because the original game was only two.
Yep, this has got a max party of four.
That makes it more interesting to me as a result, too.
And then it's got the system is literally, Lizzie can be in one town, I can be in a completely different fucking town. If Lizzie ends up pissing somebody off and she's in a fight and she's by herself, she is in a fight by herself. I am just off doing my own thing.
Yep.
It's literally got a thing of, since me and Lizzie, we were playing, since the screen has like this four split screen perspective that you can turn on and off, Lizzie started the fight and I was slightly a little bit too far. So I didn't get to roll initiative for the fight because I wasn't a part of the fight as it started. So I literally had to walk like 3 feet and then I was at the back of the turn order. And you can even run from fights that way as well. It's like, oh, all the NPCs are that you're going to be fighting are in this area over here. Let's just go that way about 20 feet. Now you've disengaged from the fight. Now those NPCs, I want to say as long as you don't initiate back in, you're good. But if those NPCs are hostile to you and you've run from the fight, if you get anywhere near those NPCs, the fight re-breaks out and it's beautiful. Yeah, so Elemental Chess is what Divinity Original Sin 2 is. If there is oil on the ground,
you
it slows
it.
You down.
Oh.
No, it slows you down. But yes, you can also burn it. So that oil then turns into fire, and people are on fire now. That fire will eventually go out and cause smoke. And that smoke blocks lines of sight. So basically it's harder to hit things if you're like have a bow and arrow. But say to put out the fire, you decide to use water, a water element. Now that character is wet, so they are more prone to be electrified. Also, you can use fire on that water to turn it to steam, which will put out fires as well. If like a character is burning, they step into steam or fog or smoke, it smothers the fire. But from the water on the ground, you can hurt the person, they're bleeding, or if there's water on the ground, you can then freeze said water or blood. And now it is ice. And my brother has definitely, with his character, slipped on ice and knocked himself out of combat for a turn. He literally lost a turn of combat for slipping on ice.
It seems like you can solve a lot of problems with water, but you need a sponge spell, like, on the ready.
Pretty much. It's great. Any kind of, like, poison that's on the ground, you can also set on fire, like, and it'll cause an explosion.
Mm-hmm.
So, not lasting fire, just an explosion, and anything that's in the explosion is now on fire. And as they move, they are spreading fire, which kind of just repeats the cycle of... This game is Elemental Tetris, and it is beautiful, and it is unforgiving and very punishing.
That sounds like a very cool tactical magic system.
It is a very cool tactical magic system. As I was talking to Neil about this game, it's a grid-based RPG, turn-based fighting game. So it's literally Dungeons & Dragons. Lizzie would not have been able to play this game if she had not been playing Dungeons & Dragons. It is quite literally like, okay, everyone's off doing their own thing, talking to characters. There are quests that are being like accepted. If you're not in the same area as that person that's talking to a character, you don't know what is going on. You quite literally have to tap X to listen in on conversations that are happening.
Oh, that's cool. That's very neat.
Yeah, so Derry screwed me out of one of our quests that we were doing because he ended up getting to an NPC before me who was dead and getting an orange, so I could not complete a quest because of it. But he didn't know because he wasn't listening to that conversation. But yeah, so it's great.
So, okay, first off, I'm going to say that you made this game sound way better than the original Divinity.
It's way better than the original Divinity Sin. Divinity Original Sin. It's way fucking better.
So that makes me interested in picking it up, especially because like you can now play with four people. That's pretty cool. First question, do they still have weird dialogue things where it's like if all four of you are together in one area and a dude's like, "Hey, help me cut off my arm so I can pay my bills." Well, can you as the four players argue about whether or not it's morally right to cut that person's arm off for whatever reason?
No.
Fake example.
But you as the player who's talking to this guy, if you decide, yes, I'm going to help him cut his arm off, the other three characters will then just be like, either what the fuck, or you as the four players can then say, okay, this has just happened. You've cut this guy's arm off. Each player have an exclamation point over their head, and they'll be able to give their two cents of input of, okay, that was cool. If it's an NPC, they'll be like, okay, that was cool. You cut that dude's arm off. Or they'll be like, what the fuck? Why'd you cut that person's arm off? I don't like you as much now.
That guy just asked him to give him a hand. It's not a literal request.
There is a gesture route that you can go as one of your tags. The traits and tag system in this game are super, super duper beefy. So one of my characters is a lizard. So I've got lizard responses. Lizard's basically the Argonian race of Divinity Original Sin, Scott. And the Argonian race is the lizard people in Elder Scrolls, for anyone who didn't know. But either way, so one of your tags is lizard. So some characters will... Humans don't like lizards, are elves. So they'll like talk down to you because you are a lizard. Or if you're undead, they'll be afraid of you. You've literally got to, one of the tags for undead people are, you've literally got to hide your face. Otherwise, risk just being attacked by random people all the fucking time. They've got tags like you can be a soldier, so you've got like soldier-like responses. You can be a jester, so you've got responses that are funny, like you can make jokes. So far, no one has responded positively to jokes that I've talked with, because one of my characters is a jester class character or a jester-like character. You can completely... classes are just a suggestion in this game. So you kind of start off with your base stats and your base spells, and they say, here are some presets that you can go with. But as you level up, you can say, okay, I'm a fighter. This is what I started with, so I've got a lot of constitution. I've got a lot of warfare, so I can use a lot of different fighting-type spells. Oh, but cool, I picked up a spell book that's got... I can turn people into chickens if my metamorph is up. So the next time I level up, I've put it into metamorph, and now I can turn people into chickens. So now I'm a fighter that can turn people into physical, literal, just small chickens, like hens and things, during combat. You can completely respec your character out. The tags give you different dialogue options, slash they give you... One of the tags is pet friendly, or pet pal is what the tag is called. So you can talk to animals. It's beautiful, because if you can't talk to animals, then obviously you don't know what animals are saying. But if you can't talk to animals, all the animals have a thing to say to you. They are all there, and dogs are just as dumb as you think they'd be. Cats are just as pissy as you think they'd be. Sheep are just the worst. They are just the worst. Fuck sheep. That's all I've got to say.
My other question and last question is this the game that also encourages you to, what's the word I'm looking for? To break the game because it's so difficult, if that makes sense. And before I get into an example, I can't remember if it's this game or if it's Pillars of Eternity 2. But I remember hearing that one viable strategy would be to use like a teleportation spell and teleport the enemies that you're having too much difficulty fighting into terrain damage tiles. Like if there's like a pool of lava that like is literally two tiles big or one tile big and it's surrounded by other things. And each turn being inside of the lava, it deals damage, like we'll say 1 HP, and a typical enemy is like 100 HP. It's actually like that is the way to play the game. You teleport the monster into the lava pit and wait 100 turns for that monster to die.
I don't know, but I want to do this now because this is something that you can't. There is a teleport spell where you can teleport not yourself.
Yeah,
you can teleport anything but yourself.
I think like, you do have the right game, because looking through, I'm checking out the Metacritic right now, and there's a very like variable swing on people's opinions from this is a phenomenal game, a real diamond in the rough, a rough diamond in the rough, I think a lot of people agree with. And then there are other reviews where it's like the difficulty in this game is more or less nonsensical at times.
Oh yeah, no, this game will, we've been wiped several times. And now that me and Lizzie and our game by ourselves don't have enough money to buy resurrection scrolls, we might just be hit with a permadeath.
Time to use that teleport spell. Teleport enemies away from you and into pits, into the water, and maybe even in the black spaces in between walls.
Yeah, I will have to see how good this teleport is.
If you could teleport enemies into the wall, would they suffocate, or would they like be obliterated because their atoms are being mixed, their particles are being intermixed with the wall?
I don't think you can teleport enemies into walls, but I will try.
There's a JoJo episode that this kind of reminds me of, part 4, and a rock. Scott knows what I'm talking about.
I do. There's also a hero in My Hero Academia who does something like that, except mm-hmm. It just like the mass of things push him out. So he just gets like shot out of any object that he hops into.
He's super cool.
Believable. That's believable.
And very naked.
Very naked.
Yeah. Clothes don't come with you.
They don't. because he's going through all matter.
This is the kind of, so you can play this game with friends from start very to finish on the campaign.
Yeah, so Scott, if you want to finally get that PlayStation Plus.
Oh, you're playing it on console?
Yeah, because my wife is playing it. And God forbid we actually plug in her custom-built PC.
I know, this strikes me as a game that I'd have to play on PC.
Poor one PC household.
They, no,
I know
they
how
have,
it is.
They have two PCs.
No, we do have two PCs.
Two PCs capable of playing the game?
Oh, yes. No, they're both custom rigs.
They're both very good PCs.
They're both very good PCs. Yeah, one's got a 1080 in it. One's got a 970. No, 980. Yeah, they're both very good PCs. You know, we just don't PC game. We're console gamers. Slash, we don't have to buy two copies of the same game if we play on PlayStation.
That's true.
Whereas, I'd rather spend $59.99 on a game rather than $120 on a game. You hear that, EA? You hear that? That was sad news, by the way.
This is where I have to ask, what is the sad news? Because it seems like there's always sad news with EA.
They canceled another Star Wars game.
Oh, yeah. I think we brought this up.
I think that was last week.
Oh, but we brought this up for the Game of the Year conversation between John Keith Buck and I.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, besides the Visceral games, the one that got shut down, they shut down the other one.
Yep.
Yep, that's sad.
Color me surprised.
Because they're going for more short-term turnaround type games.
You know what EA and Microsoft have have in common?
Game Pass?
Game canceling.
Yeah. You know what Nintendo does? Nintendo just issues an apology that this game is being reworked from the ground up and probably won't be out for the foreseeable future.
Which is good. They're giving us more than Square Enix does. Because Square Enix just stops.
Hey, Scott. I have no idea what you're talking about. And maybe our viewers or listeners do not either. Would you mind elaborating?
Yeah, thank you for making that the easiest segue possible. Anybody who logs into their Nintendo Switch and gets their little highlight and news on the left-hand side, or has been trawling the internet recently wondering, when will I finally get that Metroid Prime 4 fix? Probably saw the apology video that was recently released that in a couple more words than this states, Metroid Prime 4, let's try again. For all of us that were excited about the 4-second title video of Metroid Prime 4 that was released at E3 last year, thinking about the game probably going to be released maybe in this upcoming year or the one afterward, is going to be disappointed to hear that now Metroid Prime 4 is actually being reworked from the ground up, because at some point in time, it didn't meet the expected standards of Nintendo's staff. And therefore, Retro has actually been contacted, and they will be working on this project with producer or director? I think it's the director for Metroid Prime 4. To essentially start from scratch with the game over, which this is unfortunate to hear. It always makes me sad to hear that a game that I anticipate is not going to be coming out for quite some time. And it also means that if it would have released within this year or next year, it probably would have been a pretty disappointing experience, because Nintendo does something that I really respect as a company, which is if a game doesn't live up to their standards of quality or fun, they don't release it. And so starting from square one, that means that it's going to be a very, very long time before Metroid Prime 4 hits our consoles. But it at least makes me happy that a crappy Metroid Prime 4 was not going to be released this year or next year.
How good do you feel knowing that Retro Studios hasn't released anything since Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze or whatever?
Really
good. Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze was a really good game. Yeah.
When was that released, though? 2014?
That's like 2 years ago.
I think it's a 2014 game.
Oh, I guess they remastered it, huh? That's the only difference. Yeah, it's been quite a while. Retro Studios produces very few titles. They take a long time, but I can't think of anything they've produced that I've found to be like lackluster, subpar. So they do see... Well, wait, did they... No, that was Rare. Rare is the folks behind Banjo-Kazooie, weird like machines remake that happened way back in the day.
Yeah.
These guys have just made Mario Kart 7 and Metroid Prime and Donkey Kong.
Yeah. They're not exactly cranking out the hits. They work long and methodically on a game, and so far none of those games released have been severe flops or even mediocre in any case. I can't think of Mario Kart 7 very much because Mario Kart 8 has been out for so long and redistributed from console to console.
Yeah, Mario Kart 7 set the groundwork for what Mario Kart 8 is.
Yeah. But everything that they've made has been good. And I'll even say that, like, as far as Metroid Prime games go, I enjoyed 1 and 2. I couldn't play 3 because of the whole Wiimote format. That just did not work for me. So I skipped that game. If they even hold it up to the standard that they created 2 under, I would be more than happy to just play another Prime game.
I guess my big concern is that we already knew that Retro Studios was working on a game prior to this because Kensuke Tanabe, the director, had actually commented that he was not involved in an unannounced project that Retro Studios was working on years before. Like, I think this was after Tropical Freeze, but before the remaster. Does that mean Retro Studios is going to drop that unannounced project? Will they put that on hold? Are they going to divide their resources to 2 games? Because it's been, you know, now 11 years removed from Metroid Prime 3, 10 years removed from the trilogy, I guess, the compilation. I don't know if a whole lot of work needed to be done to port those GameCube games to Wii. How much of the remaining staff is there? And, like, what studio... Like, I mean, is Retro Studios, for the most part, still the same team that made those original games?
These are all excellent questions for someone who has more, you know, inside knowledge than I do.
If only we had some real video game journalists here.
Yeah. Hey, I consider myself a
Cookie. Video you are game the journalist. All right,
but
Cookie.
we used our only resource at PAX, and so you're overburdened with assignments and underperforming with the expected with the expected results.
I think you'll need to go to Austin, Texas, and check out Retro Studios and ask them about this. All right, next week we'll have the answers from you.
Not next week. When's Easter?
Easter's in March or April. It's
months
one of those
away.
Two. You know,
there you go. I think I'm going to be back in San Antonio, so for a wedding. But I think we're actually literally flying to Fort Worth. Oh nope, that's Dallas. Nope, not going to be in the right area.
Yeah, Texas is a large state to cover. If you're not in the city that you want to be, it's. sometimes a little too difficult to get to the next one. I would just say that Retro getting involved is probably, let's say, an indicator that Metroid Prime 4 was probably going to be a very hefty flop if it weren't for their engagement. There's still no guarantee that that is going to be an added value or a guarantee of quality when Metroid Prime 4 finally does release. In comparison to what they've published, or not published, but in comparison to what they produced more than a decade ago in the Metroid franchise. But it is probably a more positive step than just trying to figure it out with the available resources and not engaging at least the company, maybe not necessarily the team that worked on the three successes in the original trilogy.
Yep, I was going to say on a opposite spin of your second point that it's good that they're using the studio that made the first three.
Yeah, that's so normally not a bad thing.
It's keeping the Prime in-house. So yeah, so Nintendo's going the opposite of EA by not canceling a game and pushing out a game a lot sooner. And Nintendo's just saying, no, we're gonna pull a Square Enix, but we're going to tell you about it. We're pushing the game back because it was bad.
Yeah, here's the Dream Team combo. Instead of choosing Retro, who it's been a while since they've produced Metroid Prime, they get in contact with Bungie and say, hey, you're pretty good at doing first-person shooting elements. How would you feel about creating the best fusion ever? Instead of Master Chief or some other nameless space suit mech folks, let's get behind Samus Aran, the original space first-person
mech suit.
Or not first-person, but yeah, the first space mech suit fighter. Wow, that's probably the coarsest way to describe Samus Aran or any of those other folks. But this could have been a match made in heaven, and I think Retro Studios was probably just that was the safe bet. And we'll have to get Bungie for Metroid Prime 5.
I mean, yeah, when you mention it, Master Chief really is just male Samus with interchangeable gun, I guess.
Yeah, here's the thing is like, I don't even think it's that far-fetched for a different studio to get involved with a series like Metroid Prime 4, even this far out from, or actually especially this far out from the original titles, because we had Metroid Other M, and I don't know if either of you guys played that game, but it was...
The baby.
Yeah, it was terribly, terribly written, but the gameplay itself was actually quite a bit of fun. Like, I enjoyed the game a lot because it was a weird fusion between the 2D experience we come to expect from most of our Game Boy Advanced and I guess Game Boy Advanced era 2D Metroid games that were primarily the awesome platform puzzle games and the sort of 3D experience we got out of the 3DS games like Metroid Prime Hunters, I think was one, or not Metroid Prime Hunters, but Metroid Hunters and like later mobile titles. It did a good fusion between the two. And so maybe we can see other studios get involved with this franchise so we don't lose out on more Samus content in the future, but we revitalize the genre itself.
Boop, 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 boop.
But what have you been playing this week, Scott?
Oh man, do we still want to get into that?
That's your call.
Yeah, we can. Pretty quickly, I picked up, also known as Save Me, Mr. Taco, which is T-A-K-O in reference to Octopus. And the reason it's not Save Me, Mr. Octopus is because your octopus's name is Taco, which I only realized after talking to my brother, Baco, that they were going to go for a very simple naming convention for the important characters in this game. It's essentially a... very minor puzzle platformer. It has, for its unique mechanic to set it apart from other platformers, the option of Taco-san to wear up to 50 different hats to solve quests or to have different active abilities instead of shooting ink, and very much in the realm of the original Mario games, getting hit with a hat on causes you to lose your hat, and getting hit again is an instant kill. You use a live system that goes up to 9 maximum, and you can collect little gems. Every time you breach 100, you get another life. And you play on these small little like platform levels following the adventure of Taco-san as he tries to stop his brother Bako from igniting a world war with the humans and ultimately having the octopi or octopods reign supreme on the Earth again. It's an interesting game. I'm probably a quarter into it from what I can tell. It's fun. It has a very retro feel. One of the things that you can tell that the developers really focused on was giving it the classic Game Boy feel as much as possible. Is there's almost, there's like 16 different filters, or I guess like screen colors you can cycle through at any time. And most of them are within a single color palette. So you can get that like classic Game Boy green, or the the Game Boy Color without any the Game Boy Color without the color settings, sort of like gray pixel shading. You can even put in the grid background if you want, so it looks like a classic Game Boy game, and it's best played, I think, in handheld mode, just because it's a little too blown up on the screen otherwise when you play it on a giant TV like mine in dock mode. It's enjoyable, but it's not Shovel Knight, I guess, when it comes to... It has a retro feel, and it's a lot of fun, but it does feel just like a Game Boy cartridge that was lost to time that you're only finding now, and it happens to work with your modern hardware. The way the game is built is super reminiscent of the very, very old Nintendo games I used to play on like my Game Boy and Game Boy Color.
Kind of reminds me in a weird way, and it's probably that Game Boy aesthetic of Kirby.
Rounds character putting on hats, shooting things instead of ink.
Yeah, I guess it's closer than just the Game Boy aesthetic, huh?
Yeah.
Let's see. The way that the ink works too is it freezes enemies, or it like stuns them for a moment, so they break out of the ink after a while. Even if they get hit with a special ability, all your special abilities just ink the opponent. So you can freeze enemies into platforms, which is cool, but there's quite a bit of risk in when you hit them with the ink to freeze them into a platform. If they essentially break out of the inked state before you're able to move to another platform or whatnot, they do damage to you. So I think there's a lot of room also for like players being able to solve difficult challenges or move into secret areas, like running on top of the walls of the, or the ceiling of the screen and whatnot, are all possible moves, and they allow you to get a little bit better loot and more lives out of it. But it's very simple in its mechanics. Jump, you can hit up to interact or go through a doorway, and then shoot. Like, those are your buttons besides move. And it also is very, it's very focused on you being aware of what is below you, because there are many times I have chosen not to look below me, and because of the limitations to how much of the screen you see at any point in time, I've jumped to my death on I don't know how many occasions and still keep forgetting to look before I leap in a large variety of instances in which I then die.
Proud of you.
Yeah. It's a fun game. Right now it's $5 on the Nintendo eShop, so I think it's a good deal because it might be $15 normally.
Yikes.
But for $5, I think the experience is going to be worth it. For $15, I might be a little disappointed in the quality and depth of the game. But we'll see. It was released in October, so it's been a little while. It'll probably come up on sale more frequently now that it's been 6 months or so since the release. 4 months. 4 months from October. Yeah.
Does that cap your games talk this week?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, I'm going to try and beat that game soon, and then I may pick up Resident Evil. I also keep looking at Ace Combat, and I will pick up that game. I just don't know when yet.
Oh, I guess I should say I probably will stop playing Divinity Original Sin very soon.
For
Kingdom Hearts 3, did you get it?
Oh, right. That's a thing. You I forgot that game existed.
Out. Yeah.
That actually already came out.
Well, it came out in other countries, right?
Yeah.
Because other countries don't know.
It's got a worldwide release, same day.
Wait, what? I thought that was this Tuesday.
Nope. So I get my copy on Tuesday the 29th. But apparently its release date was the 25th.
Yeah, that's what I'm seeing.
Yeah, what the hell? Wait, why are you getting your copy so late, too, then? So late. It's been days.
Because Amazon gave me $10 if I bought it from them.
Ah, of course. Strange. Okay. Regardless, at this point, we probably can't say it's fake anymore or make believe.
Hopefully not. I've been ignoring reviews and keeping myself in a complete blackout on it, so it still might be fake.
Oh, 4 out of 10. I'm kidding. I'm sorry.
I'm sure it's higher than that.
I'm sure it's going to be like a solid 75% to 80% all around the Metacritic or whatever your most trusted review websites.
Yeah, that's probably a safe bet.
I'm betting it's going to be in the high 80s here.
Well, guys, if you have comments, questions, or corrections, you can write into podcast@fancyramen. Like these people, these guys. So this first one comes from an anonymous hacker. It reads, "This is not a joke. I am dead serious. Hi, perv. The last time you visited a website, you downloaded and installed software I developed. My program has turned on your camera and recorded the process of your self-fulfillment. I have edited this down in case you are wondering. My software has also downloaded all your email contact lists and a list of your friends on Facebook. I have both the podcast.mp4 with your self-fulfillment, as well as a file with all of your contacts on my hard drive. You are very perverted."
And what do they want?
And then a couple days later, we got a second email from this anonymous hacker without much more to write. With the exception of leaving the name Shirley in the sender field this time. So thanks for writing in, Shirley. We appreciate it. The second email comes from Hannah. "Hi there. I just came across your YouTube content and really liked your stuff. I'm with and responsible for reaching out to marketers and creatives who are cranking out amazing content. Take care, Hannah." Thanks, Hannah.
Just wanted to send you a hi. I don't actually want to do anything with your organization, well, but I did want you to know that I nod my head in your direction.
I did happen to maybe cut out something in there that might have been a sales pitch, but I still appreciate the email.
Wait, you're throwing out the monetization option with this random hacker? We're desperate, people.
And then actually, we did get an email today. It's one of those cases where, like, if they don't leave a name signed, I'm not sure if I should read the name or not that's in the field, so I'm not going to. But it is... I'm going to post the link into this Discord chat real quick, because it's this in one sentence. Or not even a sentence, it's a statement. "Regarding the pronunciation of Greece..."
It is Greece. Yeah, okay.
Weird. See? And now we know. Well, like yik. It's Y2K.
I think first the thought was it might have been gris.
Gris for gray in French.
Gris is gray in French. You don't necessarily pronounce the consonant unless you have something to carry it over into. Or it has following values. So Greece could be their limited understanding of French, because I do not think any of them are French. Or this could be a different language that is still within the FRISP category, or Romance languages, French, Romanian, Italian, Spanish, or Portuguese, in which it is Greece, and I'm just noticing I'm making the French connection, but it could be one of those other languages.
Studio might actually be Spanish, or in Catalonia?
Okay, and so that...
Barcelona.
Could completely explain how my connection with Gris in French is relevant, but my pronunciation is off because I'm still recognizing it as the wrong language. Yep.
Either way, now we know. It's officially
based
Greece.
In Barcelona.
What an unfortunate pronunciation.
Yeah, kind of
it's
is.
It's still a pretty game.
It's beautiful in its mother tongue, but
it's just very slick.
But for us, it just reminds us of John Travolta.
Yeah.
In the movie Grease for Niels, dramatic pause for how hard that thing flopped. Oh, I beat Wonder Song.
There was no intentional pause. It's just John Travolta and Grease go hand in hand, unless we're talking about Pulp Fiction.
Yeah. Wonder Song. Stuff is getting really messy at the end here. Wonder Song. We can have a more...
We'll talk about that next week.
We can have a more coherent talk about it next week. And I've learned more about the genre that it happens to fill. If either of you guys are interested in learning about Hope Punk, which is a new kind of modern take on sort of the like punk like philosophical stance that adapts to our like seemingly more and more sad and depressing world that we live in.
I can't believe hope punk is a genre.
Hey man, I can't believe climate change is real, and I can't believe it's not butter. There are plenty of things in this world that are surprising and yet true.
And I can't believe I can't believe it's the end of the podcast. The end of episode 104, Save Me, Mr. Taco. To our listeners out there, the few of you that exist, and the few of you that exist within my imagination, thank you very much for listening. Again, you can write us at podcast@fancyramen.com.
Also, if all 30 of you just leave a review on Apple Podcasts, I'm pretty sure we will at that point have enough reviews where I can start just naming you guys off by name.
Yeah, and then you can be associated with this podcast for better or worse. If you want to help dilute that feeling of being tied to our brand, the more people you tell, the less responsible you are for us. And so please tell a friend, tell a family member, let them know.
Again, that's Bye. The end of the podcast. I'm Neil.
I'm Cookie.
And I'm Scott. We'll see you later.